You're listening to Central Time. I'm J. Carlisle Larson in for Rob Ferret. Now, if you were presented with a potentially career-defining opportunity with an unbelievable payoff, you'd take it, right? What if it meant risking mental, emotional, and physical safety for yourself and your two best friends in order to get the job done on time? Not to mention, the employer is just more than a little bit mysterious. That's about where we pick up in a new novel by Wisconsin-based author Nicholas Butler. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Does that synopsis resonate with you at all? What did you learn from making those decisions? How did it turn out? Was it good? Was it bad? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Nicholas is the author of several books, including Shotgun Love Songs and Beneath the Bonfire. His latest, Godspeed, was published at the end of July. Nick, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So you were here with us in September, and you were talking about, you know, the books that were getting you through the pandemic. Obviously, books are a big part of your life. You have this new book out, Godspeed, that you started writing before the pandemic. It's now come out during the pandemic. You know, looking back on this book, how do you feel like you got from A to B?
Well, it's been the strangest 2 years of my life, and I think a lot of other people's lives, to put it mildly. Yeah, writing the book was kind of a roller coaster ride. I back in January of 2019, I went for a walk with my wife, and I started describing the plot of this book, and she said, "Yeah, it seems like you're excited. You know, why don't you go for it?" And then a few months later, I put out my fourth book, which was called Little Faith, and I was traveling extensively, literally all over the world to promote it, and writing Godspeed anytime I had 5 or 10 minutes of time. So when I got done writing that book, I was just spent. and then we rolled right into a global pandemic. So I'm just kind of looking forward to returning to some semblance of normal finally.
Yeah. Can you talk, you talked just a second ago about your writing process, but it might feel a little foreign to people that don't write. You know, can you talk a little bit about not only your process, but, you know, how it makes you feel in the moment and when you're done?
Yeah. Well, we have two small kids. So to be honest with you, I've never, up until the years before the pandemic, I never really had a process. You know, it was about getting the kids ready to go to school and picking kids up from school and making dinner and doing laundry and trying to squeeze some writing in around those things. I guess in 2017, I finally found a process. I would go to Shift Cafe in Eau Claire and write for about 5 or 6 hours. And I felt like I really found a nice routine. A routine that was healthy for me artistically and healthy on a community level, seeing friends and stuff like that. And then, you know, COVID rolled around and all my favorite places closed down. So I'm just sort of looking forward to things kind of hopefully returning to some sense of normal, because I didn't have a great routine when I was here at home trying to educate two small kids who really didn't want to learn from me a whole lot. But yeah, it's a strange job. You know, it's, I've had a lot of crazy jobs in my life, but this one is just really about hanging out with imaginary people all day. So,
let's talk about some of those imaginary people in your new novel, Godspeed. Obviously, without giving away the end of it, but can you talk a little bit about some of these, you know, imaginary people that you spent some time with?
Yeah, I mean, so basically it's about three guys who own kind of a fledgling construction company in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And they're approached by a mysterious homeowner who wants them to finish construction of what would be like an architectural jewel out there in Jackson. And she wants the catch is that she wants the house finished in a matter of months as they're leading up into a Wyoming winter. And the three guys in the construction company never really understand what's motivating her for that crazy deadline, but they know if they can get it done, they're each of them individually going to receive something on the order of like $750,000 plus all the money that they'll make making the home. So the book kind of functions as a mystery where you're never quite sure what people's motivations are. And information is slowly dispensed and the reader knows that something bad is going to happen, but they just don't know who it's going to happen to and when it's going to happen.
We are talking to Nicholas Butler right now. He is a Wisconsin-based author. His books include Shotgun Love Songs, and his latest novel is called Godspeed, and that is what we are talking about right now. And you had the kernel, the genesis of this book came from a story your friend told you. Am I correct there?
Yeah, back in 2014, we finished the construction of the house where I'm talking to you from, south of Eau Claire. And a family friend of mine who works in construction came over to talk and look at the house. And he started talking about this other house that he was working on, not so far away from us, south of Eau Claire, multi-million-dollar house. And he said that he and the other guys on the crew had sort of fallen behind whatever perceived timeline the homeowner had. And she got everybody on the crew together and said she would offer each of them a 5-figure bonus if they could get the house finished in the next 3 weeks. And my buddy turned to me and he said, Nick, if we had all the meth in the world, we couldn't have finished that house in 3 weeks. And I thought, whoa, that sounds like an amazing idea for a book. So then I began just kind of asking myself questions about, well, why would somebody have a crazy deadline like that? And where did their money come from? And what would happen if that crew had actually agreed to it? And what would happen if they slipped behind on their deadline and had to resort to using some unsavory resources to stay up all night long to keep working on it to meet their deadline? And at that time, you know, that was back in 2014. I knew it was a good idea, but I couldn't quite see what the setting was. For some reason, I just couldn't see setting the book in Wisconsin. And then we took a family trip out to Yellowstone, came through Jackson Hole, and did some camping in Bridger Teton National Forest near a hot springs. And I was like, this is the place. I think as a writer, you're always trying to figure out ways to sort of increase the stakes, to up the ante. And in the Jackson Hole area, the weather as you approach winter, of course, becomes much more deadly. And also this wealth disparity that we're seeing in America is much more pronounced there than it is, say, in Eau Claire County. And so then, you know, I would just sit in these hot springs and I would think about, well, what if this wasn't publicly owned land? What if this was privately owned? And then I realized where the book needed to be set, and everything opened up for me.
We are talking with Wisconsin author Nicholas Butler right now about his new novel, Godspeed. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Nicholas, either about his new book or writing? What have you been reading over the last year and a half? We want to hear from you again at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, and we will continue this conversation in just a moment right here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we are picking up our talk with Nicholas Butler, Wisconsin-based author of several books, including his latest novel, Godspeed. And you can join the conversation right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Now, Nicholas, just a moment ago, you were talking a little bit about, you know, in this book, there's this crazy time frame that the three main characters need to accomplish to get, you know, all of this money that's kind of being thrown at them by this mysterious homeowner. And one of the things that stuck out to me as I read it was just the push and pull between time and money. And when you think that if you have a lot of money, you can buy more time. Can you talk a little bit about the interplay between that in this book?
Yeah. I just saw some quote. I think I was reading some of Jim Harrison's old essays, and he'd quoted some other writer who said, you know, we trade our lives for money. When I was asking those initial questions about, you know, like, well, what kind of person sets forth this deadline, and why do they have that deadline? And also, how do they value the people that work for them? You know, those were all really interesting questions to me. And also, you know, my wife is trained as an attorney, and for a while she worked at a very exclusive law firm in Minneapolis. And we sort of had a taste of that lifestyle for a little while, though it was really eating her up. You know, she didn't love the stress of surprise. She didn't love the stress of, you know, meting her life out in 12-minute or 15-minute increments, you know, and constantly thinking about billing. And that really kind of haunted me, the idea that made her so unhappy. But also thinking about a character like Gretchen, who's one of the main characters in Godspeed, who is sort of an early pioneer in corporate law. She's one of the first women to break into her law firm, and just thinking about somebody who's so committed to her work and her craft, but also that way that, you know, some attorneys spend their whole life in a skyscraper, you know, working 15-minute increments at a time and developing a ton of wealth, but then maybe getting to the finish line of their life and just thinking, well, what was that for? That was really fascinating to me. And I think it's part of a grander sort of disease that we have in America, where we think, you know, more money or more success or power is somehow the answer to it all. And it rarely is.
Yeah, one of the things I enjoyed reading about Gretchen and this moment stood out to me was when she is in sort of that gilded skyscraper, that she is obsessed with a hawk that keeps flying around and picking up detritus from the city to build a nest. And she keeps trying to catch the hawk with, you know, a piece of steak. She wants to see it, and it just doesn't happen. And that's kind of her impetus to move to a much wilder area, which in this case is Wyoming. Did you see that kind of, and those areas too, as you mentioned earlier, have a really big disparity between those with money and those without, you know, do you think that we're paying a little bit more attention to that now?
Well, I think we definitely are. I mean, I think what we're finally seeing is maybe everyone is paying a little closer attention to it. I mean, we just have, you know, people, normal middle class or lower middle class people that are getting priced out of their hometowns because the real estate market is so bananas. And, you know, you look at a market like Jackson Hole or Santa Fe or Bozeman, Montana, or Boise, Idaho. These are all somewhat wild places, wild landscapes. And now what you're beginning to see is, you know, basically somebody who's like a plutocrat building their house in an otherwise wild area. And what does that mean for our landscape? What does that mean for wild places? What does that mean for our democracy? What does that mean for people that have less money than that? These are super interesting questions, and I'm not really trying to answer them so much as, you know, sort of pick the scab a little bit.
We are talking to Wisconsin-based author Nicholas Butler about his latest novel called Godspeed. And I want to pivot just a little bit to talk about another theme that's at the heart of your story, and that's of friendship, specifically among men. And, you know, it's not unusual for men to have long-lasting and deep friendships, but it's not as common that they're talked about or written about. Can you talk a little bit about this being a central theme to your story as well?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think anything of that, really. I'm not even sure that I totally agree, though I understand the premise of the question. I think it might be true that in literature we don't see a ton of examples of male friendship, but we certainly see it, you know, in cinema. Every cop buddy movie that I saw in the 80s or 90s is predicated on two dudes who are somehow unlikely friends, or, you know, my daughter often, you know, pokes fun of me because, you know, Lord of the Rings or any other fantasy movie like that is all just a group of guy friends off on some crazy adventure. But I think what I'm interested in is, you know, thoughtful, sensitive, soulful depictions of male friendship where, you know, men in the 21st century aren't just seen as being kind of foolish bros. I absolutely hate the term bro. I think it's just stupid. I think we should ask more of young men than we do. And so, I don't know, I'm just interested in depicting friendships that are sort of like the ones that I'm fortunate enough to have in the real world where, you know, my relationships are predicated on the natural world and music and books. And, that's what I try to do in my art as well, I guess.
Well, with that too, you have these three friends that start a business. Can you talk a little bit about why sometimes, especially in your book, eventually those don't really mix?
Well, the fun thing to do when you're writing a book like this is to withhold information. Even when you're friends with somebody for 40 years, you don't know everything about them. And so the three principles of true triangle construction, Cole, Teddy, and Bart, they've been friends forever, but they're all looking at this reward in different ways. You know, for example, Cole and Teddy don't know that Bart is looking at it purely as a way out. He's going to quit the business. His knees are shot. He doesn't want to work construction anymore. And that sort of thing was fun to do, you know, to create these characters who are so intimate, but still don't know everything about each other. It just adds another stress, you know, within the plot, where people don't quite know everything.
And of course, without giving away the ending, is it safe to call the way that the story ultimately unfolds a thriller?
I hope so. I mean, you know, I was influenced by, when I was writing this book, when I came up with the idea for this book, I was influenced by books like A Simple Plan by Scott Smith and Treasure of the Sierra Madre by B. Traven and Deliverance by James Dickey. You know, I wanted to write a book that was a little bit different than my others, that's a little bit more of a page turner, you know, that could be considered a thriller, but I also wanted to pay, you know, attention to, you know, the molecular level of writing a book, the, you know, writing pretty sentences and stuff like that and getting into character development. So I think of it as a literary thriller. At least I hope that's how people are going to encounter it.
Well, I will definitely say that I spent a good time reading it today during the rest of my prep and a couple of days ago as well, and I found it very engrossing for what that's worth. As someone who loves to read, I want to ask you, what have you been reading recently that has really stood out to you?
Yeah, I just finished a book called The Night Always Comes by Willie Vlotten. He and I were in conversation, virtual conversation at a British book festival, and he started describing his book, and it kind of sounded like our two books were a little bit in conversation with one another. It's about a small family in Portland, Oregon, and they're trying to buy a house to sort of advance their standing in the city and in life. And let's just say that there's some monkey wrenches that are thrown into that plan. And it's a little bit of a ticking clock sort of thriller, a little bit like mine. I love that book. What else have I read? The Ninth Metal by my friend Benjamin Percy came out this summer. Nice literary thriller mystery there. And then I took a trip up to Isle Royale with my wife and son and carried with me a book called Heavier Than Heaven, which was a biography of Kurt Cobain. And really enjoyed the heck out of that book.
Well, Nicholas, thank you so much for those recommendations. And thank you so much for talking to us about your new book today. It's been a whole lot of fun.
Oh, it's been fun for me too. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Nicholas Butler is a rural Wisconsin-based author. I believe he's just south of Eau Claire. We talked with him about his latest novel called Godspeed as well as his pandemic experience so far. And you can catch Nick doing a reading tomorrow night at Northwind Book and Fiber in Spooner and appearing on Saturday at the Untitled Town Book Festival in Green Bay.